at the beginning, it was really hard to reach the CEOs who actually are the decision makers. So I had to sit in front of the phone every day for like a week, calling the 400 numbers and reach to their sales team. And they would always tell me, we will pass it to the manager. And please leave me your number, we'll call you back. Of course, they never do. So I would just take the next step. I actually would try to Google the CEO, and then I just Facebook them, I LinkedIn them, and actually it works.
So which channel did you find the CEO eventually?
LinkedIn.
Yajun. Welcome to Woman the Podcast.
Hang on a second, woman or women?
Woman and women. It's our podcast and we are women, as you can tell. So it's a podcast that discusses topics that affect our everyday life. It could be work, lifestyle, culture, love, politics, basically anything that relates to our daily life in this fascinating country.
We know there are already a lot of English language books and podcasts about China, all trying to make sense of this complicated, diverse, and sometimes just crazy place. What we're hoping to do with this podcast, which we think is a little bit different, is to talk about everyday life in China from the inside. Our aim is simply to share observations and exchange ideas about living in China and hopefully provoke some thoughts and debates along the way.
And whether you're living a life similar to ours, we're just interested in what life is like for young women in China today. We're confident that you'll enjoy and relate to what we talk about.
In this episode, we talk to Ailin Guo, a young, intelligent, and passionate woman who describes herself as a serial entrepreneur. This interview was conducted over a year ago. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to join as I was busy preparing my wedding. Ailin sat down with Yajun and shared her stories on why she left her up-and-coming career as a consultant in a multinational company and started her venture with her husband as entrepreneurs. Ailin is now immigrated to the United States, but continues to pursue her entrepreneurial dream. Supported by her work and life partner, William, she's in talks with venture capital firms to fund their next big idea. Welcome, Ailin.
Hello everyone, my name is Ailin. I'm 29 years old, modern, fashionable Chinese young lady living in Beijing. I'm also a serial entrepreneur. Now I'm onto my third or fourth company in the making. So I'm happy to be here and share my experiences with you.
Third and fourth, huh? Wow, impressive. So can you give us some introduction about your startup experience? Like, what's each startup about?
Well, my most important partner in all these experiences is my husband. We started our first company 4 years ago. It's a study abroad agency. What we did is connecting the foreign consultants with the Chinese students that tries to study abroad and provide them services online. And the second company that we have right now is a cross-border e-commerce platform that focuses on bringing foreign organic cosmetics into China. And the third company that we're trying to start right now is an IT company focusing on hardware, smart hardware specifically. And the fourth one might also be a online company that tries to bring some Chinese goods for sale in the US. But that one is still in the process of being explored.
It's quite impressive, I have to say. I mean, a lot of people cannot handle even one startup. You can do four.
It's a very hard process, and it takes us a few years to really get used to the loneliness and other challenges that comes along the way and really support each other. So we're really proud of each other and happy about where we are right now.
So how did you start the whole thing? How did you start the first company?
The first one is actually, it started off based on a very practical reason. We needed money.
That's a good reason.
When I met my husband, he was an exchange student studying in China. And I had just...
So he's American, right?
Yeah. And he just came to China, and I just graduated from grad school in the US and came back to China and landed on my first job at Burs & Marsteller. So we fell in love and he decided to drop out of school for me. He didn't go back to America, didn't get his degree, so it's very hard for him to get a good job here in Beijing. And with my salary, I definitely couldn't afford serve both of us food and put bread on the table. So we decided to, you know, why not just start something on our own? And we had an idea and I just quit my job and started doing that company with him. We didn't have any money at the time. So in order to brand our own services and promote it to the students, we would sit in front of the computer using social media. You know, Weibo just came out at the time to market our services. And it actually went really well. You know, with $0 marketing investment, we generated like 1,000% return. So it was good at the beginning. And then we just kept going for 4 years. It was hard at times, but we got through.
Wow. So that means you had a very stable life, stable income, and a loving husband, of course. So how did you start to think about doing the second startup?
After 3 or 4 years of running our first company, we both got really bored and to the point that we're just really unhappy waking up to do this job because it's very standardized and you have to face our clients every day and most of them are students. So I really missed the feeling of working with professional people, you know, talking about business, talking about bigger ideas. So just around the time, some of my husband's friends who live in California started to talk to us about, you know, the new organic trend over there. And it was very amazing to me that beyond organic foods, people over there are starting to make organic everything, like from clothing to makeup to lotions, everything you can think of. So, you know, as a woman, I and my skin is really sensitive as well. I can't use anything that has chemical in there. I just thought that there's nothing like that in China. Why not bring those brands into China and sell it? It's a blank in the market right now. We have huge opportunities. And just so happens that the Chinese government started to promote the cross-border e-commerce policies, which allows the merchants to import goods into China without having to go through the testings, the Food and Drug Administration testing and registration process. So we just decided that, you know, this is something that we can do and we can fund it ourselves without involving any other investments. Just did some research and found a very reliable partner and start talking to brands overseas. And that went on very well as well, until the government changed their policy again.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Oh, by the way, I mean, you didn't have any experience of selling any overseas brands in China. So how did you convince your partner overseas that you can do this job and, you know, let them trust you to bring this brand to Chinese market?
I think mostly I persuade them. Two reasons. One is a unique policy advantage at this point. If you don't enter China right now with us using the cross-border e-commerce channel, you will probably never gonna be able to enter China through the traditional trading way because that requires you to have animal testing, chemical testing, repackaging, relabeling, and all those things, which is to some extent against the brand's ethical standards because they will never do animal testing. So that was very attractive to them because most organic brands in the US and in Europe right now, they're very small because it's a new industry. So they don't have the resource to go through all those hassle of repackaging and stuff. From an economic perspective, they really love the idea. And secondly, I think it's because we come in really sincere and we know how to persuade them using our reasoning. And we can say that, you know, we have our own warehouse, we actually do. So before we approach them, we already figured out what we can do in China for them so that we can go in and tell them what resources we have, how much we can sell per year as their distributor, and use numbers to explain a opportunity they can have partnering with us. So that was very smooth as well. Didn't go through too much hassle. At the beginning, it was really hard to reach the CEOs who actually are the decision makers. So I had to sit in front of the phone every day for like a week, calling the 400 numbers and reach to their sales team. And they always have this negative attitude at the beginning. They would be like, oh, we don't do China because China has all these rules and we don't have the resource to do it. And I would have to spend like 30 minutes to 1 hour explaining to this customer service person, this is the new policy, you gotta trust me. And they would always tell me, we will pass it to the manager and please leave me your number, we'll call you back. Of course they never do. So I would just take the next step. I actually would try to Google like the CEO and then try to add them on LinkedIn. I just like Facebook them, I LinkedIn them, and actually it works.
So which channel did you find the CEO eventually?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. He responded through LinkedIn.
Yeah, I wrote a very persuasive note, like, I can help you enter Chinese market. No testing, no repackaging, no relabeling. And I just sent that, and he responded like immediately, because he was actually looking to expand into Asia market as well at the same time. All the negotiation went on really smoothly, and I really enjoy doing business with Americans because things move forward, and both parties are really like sincere and trusting each other, so it's very smooth.
So how is business going right now?
I'm glad you're asking. Because everyone knows one of the biggest risks of doing business in China is the policies. Trade being such a heavily influenced market that's so heavily influenced by policies. When we started the cross-border e-commerce, one of the biggest attractive feature of the industry is that the government allows you to import goods without going through the registration process. So that hence the no testing, no repackaging. But 2 weeks ago, they just announced that you have to do that again. So once again, that just goes against the ethics standards of all the organic brands abroad. So they will not do that, and we will not be able to import their goods again. But with the policy changes, there comes new opportunities. Still, the market hasn't changed. If they don't allow organic goods to come into China anymore, that means it's still like a blank market. And because I have the resources with the foreign brands and right now, I have resources to buy their formula, then I can start up my own brand in China and sell my own organic cosmetics in China. With that, I don't have to go through the trading. I don't have to go through the registration. Of course, there's going to be another set of rules governing the Chinese or cosmetics brands. But as long as it's domestic and it doesn't have to go through customs, I'm happy and I'm willing to give it a shot. And right now, we actually are already approaching several organic farms and trying to figure out like the price range and the cost and how much we can sell the goods for and doing a little bit research on those fronts.
So even though there's a very strict policy right now, you're already thinking about your next step.
Yeah, you have to reflect. You have to respond really fast to these changes. And actually, I think it is an opportunity because before, when we were importing all these goods, you're competing against like thousands of importers importing the same goods. But now, if no one is allowed to import it anymore, and there's no one selling such products, and I have the formula, then I might have a better advantage in the market to do this. So we're looking at it, you know, in a very positive way. So going to the U.S. Very soon, next month, we will go to the organic brands plant and see how they manufacture goods over there, how they track the process of manufacturing the organic cosmetics all the way from farm to the shelf, and see if it's plausible for us to do it in China as well. And if it's plausible, you know, we will go through with this. I think it's a good idea.
I believe so too. So, okay, next step. So tell us more about your third adventure. That's the interesting one I heard.
The third one, I wouldn't even call it a success, but I would say it's a good trial because at least we were heading towards the right direction. We were actually working on a camera that's specifically designed to serve the live streaming apps, which will already cover millions of users. And then we can open the SDK of our camera to fit all different kinds of user scenarios. So when you take the camera into your car, it becomes the road recording device. And then when you bring it into your home and turn on another app, you can start to surveillance your home using it as a surveillance camera. Then if you use the camera, put it on your ear or on your helmet, it can become like a travel recording device. So it's unlimited possibilities if we open the SDK, so that we become like a more like a service kind of a hardware platform for developers to come in and develop possibilities for the hardware. We actually went into doing research about the cost of such a camera, the time, like our business plan. We already have like a rough idea of how much time we need to develop a camera, how much time we need to have to brand it and put it in the market, and what kind of channels do we have, what kind of resource I have to negotiate with the apps that might work with us. And then 2 weeks ago on a Thursday, I drafted the business plan, got the team together, everybody reviewed it and said it was okay to go. And I told my contact that I will send you the business proposal Friday and let's get the investors to hear it. Friday morning, GoPro released a press release that's exactly the same as my business proposal. Many of you might have heard they're going to open their SDK as well and try to have developers come in to develop different apps for GoPro. So that's that. Basically, that just kills our idea. So maybe it's fate. What can I do?
How did you feel when you heard the news about GoPro's new product?
My first reaction is the F word. And then we kind of tried to look at this in a positive way. My CTO just really got into a depression and got sick over the weekend. But I was okay because, you know, over the few years, me and my husband, we had like a lot of ideas. And some of them, we just kind of wake up the next day and thought it was not good. But some of them we thought it would be good and we would try to pitch to people and nobody would think it was a good idea, so we gave up without even doing it. So we're actually very used to failures over the years. So I knew,
like Steve Jobs, right? Used to failure.
Yeah, you have to as an entrepreneur. If you just get like frustrated over one shot, you're not going to survive, because being in a startup team, you will always experience setbacks and challenges. So you have to always know how to bounce back and get back to work, being positive. I think it's going through the first stage is the hardest. When we started the first company, there were times when we just started, there were times when we don't really have clients, and you have to spend days and weeks and months even just not having any income, but just try to talk to people and try to tell them that we have a good service, believe us, you know, those sorts of things. That was the hardest time in my life. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it was very lonely because no one around me was doing startups back then. Not like today. Everyone is trying to have a startup venture. Back then, I was the first one amongst my network, my friend circle, to quit my job, which was a really good job, to try to start something on my own. And my parents thought I was crazy. So I wasn't really getting a lot of supportive system from people around me. So it was just me and my husband, and it was really lonely times. But, you know, after we went through that, and thank God we went through that, now it's just like failure to me is not really big of a deal. It just means new opportunities, maybe, like the cross-border e-commerce.
You mentioned that your parents think you are crazy. Yeah. Can you explain more and tell us more about what they said about your new adventure, you know, all of that?
My parents are very conservative Chinese parents. But, you know, after, you know, I officially start being with my husband and we were going through the financial difficulties and I decided to quit my job, my parents thought, why? You have such a good job with very good pay compared to your peers. And also, like, you have very bright potential. I was doing quite well at birth and getting promoted within 1 year. The youngest associate in the company, So I was very painful when I quit my job as well, but I decided to do it anyways. And also my parents thought that I received very good education in the US with a fellowship. So they just thought it was not their mindset to have their daughter quit their job to do this. It's just too risky. And there's no guarantee that we're gonna make money. We might just not make money at all and have to go back, look for another job. So for them, it's like a waste of time. Why trying? And besides, like my parents, they both had stable jobs for their life, which is understandable for their generation. So quitting job and start something new without any backup is just not an option for them. But I did it anyways.
Do you think it's a common thing that in this kind of a startup circle that for parents' generation, they don't think you need to work hard. Stability is more important than anything because it's just a job. But for our generation, like you know, you had so many adventures. Because for you, job is, it's not only a job, it's a career. And you want to do more in your life, right? So it's like the difference of a value costs a lot of argument, could be in the family, and misunderstanding.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're absolutely right. For their generation, they were so poor. They have this iron bull concept where if you have a job, just stick to it for your life, whether you like it or not, because that would put food on the table for your family. I think that's exactly what my parents did, and that's what my grandparents did as well. So it's like a deep-rooted cultural thing, at least in my family, and I also think in 90% of Chinese family as well. For my generation, I was able to experience way more than my parents. I was able to go to the United States to have my graduate education and then come back working in an American firm, living in Beijing, which is a huge city. So my mindset and my horizon is obviously different than my parents. There's definitely a lot of conflicts about almost everything. I'm way more like risky than and more like positive and optimistic than them. They would always say like, no, when you quit your job, you gotta know it's not so easy to start a company. It's not as easy as you think. You may fail. And I would be like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, let me just try it. But they're very risk averse. So I just followed my decision with my husband, and now they're very supportive because we've proved ourselves. And it's also like a very common thing for younger generation to start up their company and take the risk. So I think they are gradually used to the idea. And now that they know we're financially stable and we can not worry about money for at least the next 10 years. So they're not worried about us. And actually they kind of turned around and start to be more receptive of new ideas, seeing how we are. Looking at my husband and I go travel, go diving, and adventures that we take, they think it's very cool. And now when we start up new companies, my parents would even try to talk to me and ask what it is and try to give suggestions and being very supportive. So very happy about this development. And
but when they give you a suggestion, do you think the suggestion's helpful or not?
I think so. Because even though it might be a little bit outdated, but I think a little bit more caution is always good. Because my father works in the government, so he has some insight about policies. If I do some policy affected industries, I would ask him, you know, why don't you look up some policies and let me know what it is. He's really happy that he can help me. My mom, she was an accountant, so she would always give me advice on your company accounting and stuff like that. Even though some, like 80% of their suggestions are really not useful or it's not up to date because, you know, they both are close to retirement right now, so they're not very up with the trend. But still, I just enjoy the process of talking to them and seeing how happy they are that they know they can help me, quote unquote. So, you know, it's a mutual thing. I now, looking back, I understand why they were worried about me. So I'm happy and proud that now they don't have to anymore.
You mentioned that for the first two startups, you didn't need to look for investors, right?
No.
But for the third one, you need to.
For the third one, yes, because it's very capital intensive. And actually, right now, we not only need capital, we also need networks. from the investor to help us develop really fast. Because you know, in China, the copycats is a really huge problem. So you want to really take as much share in the market as possible with the shortest amount of time. Otherwise, if you're a little bit slower than your copycat, you could be pushed out of the market. So that's why we wanted investor. I could found it myself, but you know, it just doesn't seem like a very smart idea, because the investors, they know all those networks in different industries, all the KOLs, the right resources. That would really help your business grow.
So how did you look for money? I know you went to meet with FA, financial
advisor.
Right. So yeah, tell us the whole experience.
The financial advisor is actually my high school alumni. We graduated from a very prominent high school in Chongqing. So a lot of my alumni and even classmates, very close classmates, are very established young people now. One of them owns one of the biggest and best financial advisor company in Beijing. So we just came together, have hot pot, Chongqing style. It's not really like meeting him for investment per se, more like just trying to know what's trendy in the investment capital market, and also what are the investors looking for before we go in and to talk to the investors. So it was really funny, you know, like people working in the financial industry, they have very open mind. They don't judge. The dinner was covering all kinds of topics. They were saying even fortune telling can make a huge money and get investment as well. So after the dinner, I really like understood a lot more differently of how this capital game works. And key takeaway is also to nowadays in China, because there are too many startup teams, the investors are always looking for the most reliable people to invest in. So they are looking at your profile. What have you done before? What kind of track record do you have? And also, what kind of resource do you have now to achieve your business proposal? And also, there's very obvious trends in the market where they would like to invest. Like this year, it's the live broadcasting and VR and AR. So those are the trendy topics. Unfortunately, you know, our GoPro idea didn't go through, but otherwise I think it would be a good idea to get investment, because you know, it could be borrowing both VR and live broadcasting trends.
How much money do you think you will need to fund your project if it go through?
For that one?
Yeah.
We were thinking at least 5 million, at least, that's the minimum. But if we can get 10 million, that would be the best. Because one of the first things that we were thinking is we would start with a B2B channel where we would make tailored devices for the live broadcasting apps. And then at the same time, we would start to do R&D, trying to invent our own camera with a very easy to use industrial design where you can put it everywhere and anywhere, however you want, to fit the all kinds of scenarios that you might use it for. So that's why we needed a lot of money, because you gotta hire the industrial designer, the engineer, and the programmers. But otherwise, it could be just a very cheap idea. If you want to just start up a website. So, you know, if I'm starting an internet-based company, I don't need any funding, because I already have the resources to make tons of websites to this day already. Even for the study abroad company, we already had 4 websites. We try to update the website every year. I've already have a team of designer and IT people. So if we're making an e-commerce platform or just a website, we can do it in-house like that. We don't need funding at all.
So what's the most rewarding thing in the whole process of going through all of the adventures?
On a personal level, I think the most rewarding thing was that we really made it happen. And at the beginning, it was really a struggle for me and my husband on a personal level as well, because you know, as a couple, if you don't have money at all, there's gotta be a lot of problems. You can't go out on a nice romantic date. You know, you're living in a very bad place. There's a lot of fights. So on a personal level right now, we are able to just not worry about money and live a pretty good life. That's the most rewarding thing. And on a professional level, I think the most rewarding thing is that our mind is just so like creative. We can come up with ideas and ideas and ideas, and we can actually pull them together and try to generate something new, even though there's going to be a lot of failures on the way. But we know, we believe that one day one will become successful, like hugely successful than what we have today. So I think that's the most rewarding part, just like being able to think about new things and do it and not think about anything else.
Actually, what you described, it's very different from the stereotypes of Chinese students or Chinese people. For example, like you mentioned that you guys are really creative, but being creative is not, you know, a character that a lot of people associate that to Chinese people, because we come from this kind of a education system and we're told what to do, and being creative wasn't encouraged in school or by parents. So how do you think, you know, you are gifted to be so creative?
Actually, I'm not gifted. I wasn't. I was exactly what you said, like not creative at all. I went to business school in the US, and like my mind was kind of shaped in a way where it's all textbook, like what needs to do, what needs not to be done, you know. So when I just quit my job for that very practical reason that we need to be together, we need to make money together, I tried to execute the company exactly according to the textbook. Like, I need a very fancy office because we're charging a lot from the customers. And if you don't have a good office, that's not going to sell. So that almost broke us, because we put most of our money into renting a very luxury place, like where we're sitting right now, and didn't generate any orders. Whereas my husband, he didn't go through any school. Basically, was just like very open-minded and trying to be practical. He said, you know, we're an internet company, we're online, we don't need an office. So, you know, he was right. So after that, I just kind of changed my mindset and started to think how to start up things more cost effectively. And also after, that's the first lesson of me knowing that, you know, it's not always how the books told you or what the society or what your parents told you. You got to think by yourself and look at the business ideas and think about how to execute them. And also another thing about having one successful company is that you just get addicted to it, and you always want to think about something else that is equally successful, if not more. So, you know, over the last 4 years, I can't even tell you how many crazy ideas we've had. We would go out to Sanlitun and drink, and all of a sudden we'd be like, oh my gosh, I have this idea. And then we would be like really happy and, you know, discussing it and just drawing and get a napkin and start drawing on there, writing down. And we were like, oh, don't forget about it, because tomorrow we might have hangover and we would forget about this. And then we would write on the napkin.
And then you kept the napkin.
And the next morning we would look at the napkin and be like, what is this? It's not possible. This idea is not possible. We don't have a business model for this.
Okay, tell me your craziest idea that you guys came out with.
The craziest idea, I remember there was one, but it was already executed by Lei Jun.
Oh, okay. That must be a very good idea.
Yeah, you know the U plus apartments?
No.
So, you know, we were living in very bad apartments at the beginning of our relationship. But you know how, like, just by a little bit of remodeling, you can make the apartment look really great and rent it out at a very high price. So we were thinking one night that if we can find like a very bad building in a very good location in Beijing, which there's tons, right? You can find a building like that in CBD very easy, and just like remodel like the place and remodel it in a way like it's like a dorm in the US, where it's, and you only rent it to young people with like good jobs at foreign firms so that they can bond. It becomes like a community instead of just like separated apartments in Beijing. Because, you know, in Beijing, nobody say hello to their neighbors. So, you know, that was the idea. And it just so happens that at the time, one of my high school best friend from high school, was thinking about doing the same thing. So we were just like kind of excited about that and talked about it for a while. And then we realized it's too hard to execute for us. We're not the right people to do it. Because for one, if you want to rent out the whole building, it's almost close to impossible, because why would everyone in that building just like vacate their home for you? Right. And two is like, if you don't vacate the whole building, if you just only do one or two apartments in that building, still the environment is not good. You still can't have the community vibe. So it's just like there's too much issue that we can't, you know, solve with our resources. But, you know, Leijing did, so. And that project is doing really well. They already have like a few apartments in Shenzhen and everywhere. I think in Beijing there's apartments like that right now as well. And they're already making financial products for the loan. They securitize the loans. So they're already building different, you know, more ways to make money from that idea. So that, I think that was the craziest idea we had. But, you know, for entrepreneurs, especially like us, I don't think idea really matters, because everyone can have idea. It's how you execute. If you can't execute it, it's not a good idea for you. Just like that one.
Thank you for listening to Woman. We would love to hear your feedback. Drop us an email at womenpodcast, womenpodcast@outlook.com. We'll see you next time.